Welcome back to the podcast, y'all. In this week's episode, I have got a client interview for you that you're going to want to listen to if you are wanting to go from side hustle to full-time in your business, if you're wanting to hire somebody in your business, if you're looking to go from solopreneur to having a team. Basically, if you want to level up your business, I think that you will get something from this week's interview. You are listening to the Profit and Prosper podcast, the podcast that empowers female entrepreneurs to make more money, become financially independent, and live prosperously. I'm your host, Sarah Young, a seven-figure agency owner and business and wealth coach who's worked with hundreds of entrepreneurs to create more profitable, sustainable businesses. So today I'm talking to my client, Misty, who started last fall inside of Money Momentum, which is my money program where you set up your financial foundations to be able to save 5 to 6 figures every year from your business. Money Momentum, side note, is included in the High Profit Society for free. You just get all of the content from Money Momentum already included in your membership. Misty started in Money Momentum last fall and in less than 6 months saved about $65,000, felt confident that she had a plan in place to quit her full-time job, and now is a full-time business owner starting up or building up her second business and has continued to pay herself consistently, all because she set up financial foundations, she created a plan, and just felt confident that she had the ability to go and make money and she had the runway to be able to build her business up to the next level. Before we jump into the interview, I want to give you a very quick reminder that today, the day that this podcast episode comes out, is going to be the last day you can get on the waitlist for the High Profit Society because the waitlist is going to open tomorrow, Friday, April 26th, and then the doors will open for everybody else Monday, April 29th. The High Profit Society is my all-new community for women business owners who want to build financial freedom and financial health by growing their businesses profitably and sustainably. Inside, you're going to get monthly trainings, Q&As, all my content library, including Money Momentum, and a whole bunch more. We're going to run group challenges and you're going to have a community and so many other fun things. If you go and get on the wait list, you will be able to sign up and get founding member bonuses, which include a locked in forever, incredibly discounted monthly rate and a bonus mini mastermind that I'm hosting in May for our first challenge, which is the 5-figure baseline challenge. So if you're not on the waitlist today, or if you're catching this episode after the waitlist period has closed, you can go to sarahhyoung.com/society and get yourself on the waitlist or get signed up today. I am so pumped for this episode, y'all. Misty, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to share my story.
First things first, tell us about your business, how you started it, why you started it. Like, give us the background of what you do.
My name is Misty Malloy. I am the founder and co-creative director of Co-Creative Interiors. I founded my interior design firm in November 2019 and officially launched literally the week before COVID hit. So I had a launch party and the week later, the world shut down. So my story, even up to that point, has been a really long and winding road. It's one of the things I've had to learn as an entrepreneur is the path is not straight and narrow, even if you have a goal in mind. And it's something I've had to get comfortable with. So without going too far back, my roots lie in the nonprofit and corporate sector. I have a master's degree in leadership and organizational change. And I spent a lot of time helping companies to grow, develop processes, frameworks, and that type of thing. I've always had a love for design and decided to apply all of the processes that I had learned throughout the years to the design process to actually involve clients in design. I feel like a lot of designers keep their clients at arm's length when they're designing. And so Co-Creative Interiors was born to co-create with clients. So that's us in a nutshell. We provide design services primarily with furnishings and space planning, but we also help with renovations and new builds. So we really kind of span the gamut.
Yes. And tell us also about your second business that you have.
So the one that is in the works and has been born out of the recognition of a need is the Co-Creative Collective. And that is designed to help designers, and it's also expanding to contractors to help them develop the back end of their business. So many times designers are phenomenal creatives and they really want to be able to focus on doing the work that they love, which is making clients happy with beautiful design, but the back end often suffers. I know that's something you're really passionate about too, and it's what drew me to working with you was figuring out how to make the back end work so that we can be profitable while still running a design business that we love. So it primarily looks at things from an operations perspective. So what do you need to have an exceptional experience for your clients, but also enjoy your business? And that can be really difficult to do if you don't have systems and processes in place.
I think it's really interesting the evolution you've had from your master's degree and corporate world experience and then going and starting a business, your design business, that's totally different than what you did in the corporate world, which I know a lot of people do. I didn't personally, but a lot of people do just because you don't want anything to do with what you were doing in the corporate world. But then you see, I actually have this really high value skill set that you can apply in a different way to the industry that you love, which is design. So with the back end processes and other things you do, I just think that's an interesting evolution that you're taking.
Yeah, that goes back to the path never being straight and narrow. It just continues to evolve based on what presents itself and the different things that, yeah, come up along the way.
So the first time we talked, I want to say it was like last October or November, and you were still full-time in your job. I remember thinking you were doing about 8,000 things. You were full-time in your job, also doing design work, also starting your second business, also a mom, doing all the things. And then you quit your job in, what was it, February or January?
January 2024.
So you finally decided you had had enough. You're ready to quit your job. So I'm just really interested in what was it that held you back from quitting your job? And then what was it that finally made you feel comfortable enough to pull the trigger?
I think for a long time, I never intended to leave my corporate gig. I had a lot of fun with a phenomenal company that I helped to grow from the ground up, essentially. And I actually don't think that I ever thought I would leave. And, you know, things change as you grow and just other things out of your control change. And so I got to the point where I was like, this can't be a side hustle anymore. My corporate job was becoming more and more demanding because we were growing. And my design job was becoming more and more demanding because it was growing as well. And I started out doing small design jobs because it was something I enjoyed doing. And I was very specific about how I provided design services, but then the more well-known I became, the more people started asking me to help with things that I didn't initially set out to do, like renovations and new build design. And I found myself interested in exploring those ideas, but something had to give. And it took me longer than I would have liked for me to have gotten to the point where I felt comfortable walking away. And part of that was because I had a corporate job that, yes, paid well, but honestly, I had a lot of flexibility. I was a remote worker. And, you know, it's funny that even though I pretty much worked remotely, I would say 95% of the time, there's this idea that you have flexibility. And I really didn't have that much flexibility, especially as we continued to grow. And so that really became the tipping point for me deciding that I had to figure out which way to go. One way or the other, it was either going to be going all in on my corporate career or all in on design. And I had just worked too hard to build up my design business to completely let it all go and decided to make that leap. I never paid myself for my business in the beginning in a traditional sense. So I was fortunate to always be profitable, but I was squirreling away money with the intention of using that to invest in real estate. That was my strategy. It was a side hustle not meant to pay for my day-to-day life. It was meant to build up a nest egg to be able to invest in other ways to continue to build my wealth. And so when I got to this point where I was considering making a decision, at that point, I had to come up with an actual strategy for making my exit. And that's when you and I became involved, because I knew that I needed someone to help me work through the financial side of things to feel comfortable making the leap. And, you know, we were talking earlier about how I don't think you ever feel completely comfortable. It doesn't matter how much planning you do, how much prep work you do. At the end of the day, you just have to make a leap. And having a bit of a parachute makes jumping a little bit easier. So I had the money already set aside. And I remember one thing you said when we first started working together is like, you can't just have all this cash sitting out there. Like, what is it doing? It has to have a purpose. And I'm like, yeah, it has a purpose. It's sitting there. So when I need it, I have it. What do you mean, Sarah? It does have a purpose. And the biggest thing that I think helped me make that leap was actually creating a plan for my money and determining what I needed to do with it. So we can talk a little bit about how I broke down the cash and what I decided to do with it, if that would be helpful.
Yeah. I do want to say, like, you are a classic example of what I call a money hoarder. So most people tend to fall on one end of the spectrum. It's either you hoard cash and you're kind of afraid to not have a ton of cash in the bank. And then you have the other people who tend to spend money as fast as it comes in the door. And so they never really have a huge amount of cash in the bank. And, you know, I've always said my natural tendency is to be on the spending end of the spectrum, and yours seems to have been more on the hoarding end. And neither one is good or bad or anything like that. I just think it's helpful to recognize why you are doing the things that you're doing. And is it actually serving you in the way that you think it is?
So actually, I think that's a bit of interesting commentary because I am a spender. I do consider myself to be a spender. So one of the first things I did, which I don't recommend doing now that I've done it, is I invested heavily in branding and creating a website because I felt like I needed that clout to be able to bring in the kind of design client I wanted to serve. And, you know, so much of that is rooted in fear and are you enough and all the kinds of things. So I spent heavily in that. I've invested heavily in photography to show off the work that I've done. And I never had to think about how I spent money because it wasn't what paid my bills. So I think that's a lot of why I started hoarding was because in my head, I was like, you know, I've always been able to spend on what I needed to do what I thought I needed to do to be able to keep the business moving forward without really having to worry about any repercussions. And so making that switch into, well, now I have to actually pay myself as opposed to just using it to move the business forward was a shift in mindset that triggered the hoarding. And I have been very intentional since leaving corporate to pay myself a salary twice a month, basically on the same schedule where I was being paid with my corporate gig. And I think that's been really helpful just to make my business feel real, like it's a real job and I have to get into the habit of paying myself. Part of that was having a runway. So when we were talking about my cash hoarding issues, we were like, what are we going to do with it? So for me, I felt most comfortable. My husband felt most comfortable. This was a joint decision, pulling together 6 months worth of salary post-tax. And we had calculated that out as well to have as a reserve for giving myself a runway to get off the ground. And I will say, I've actually not had to tap into that yet. I have been able to pay myself with revenue that the business is generating. And we can talk more about like, why do I have 6 months? How do we get to that number? And kind of what am I doing moving forward? So in addition to that, I also had 6 months worth of business expenses as well. And that was, again, another thing that you and I spent a lot of time doing. I knew how much I made in corporate and how much I wanted to keep paying myself. I was not willing to take a salary cut. So it was more about figuring out how much expenses I had. Were they necessary expenses? How to plan for them, you know, the difference between monthly expenses and annual expenses and knowing when your cash flow is going to be important to hit, make sure you have those expenses. So just coming up with that big picture perspective and a plan gave me as much control as I could hope to have to be able to make the leap.
Yes, I think control is a really good word because a lot of people will just pile up cash in their business checking account waiting for the day when they may or may not need it. And I think that really comes from scarcity, the fear that the business is not going to keep bringing in cash. And then what are you going to do when it all just basically goes down the toilet? And I think it gives you the illusion of control over the situation. But really, I think what was interesting to me, and actually this has inspired the way that I've structured the High Profit Society to include both the financial piece and the business piece. But what was interesting to me with you specifically is when we started with the financial piece But then I saw you quickly transition into realizing that it's not just about having money in the bank, but it's also about having the skill set and the plan to be able to continue to bring revenue in the door, to know exactly what is the plan for both of these businesses, what are we doing here? You know, that's what we're working on now, but I feel like it's sort of this natural progression, right? So you were able to put in terms of savings, something like $65,000 into your savings account in less than 6 months, which is amazing. Like, if I haven't told you that lately, that is legitimately amazing. And that gave you the runway that you needed for both your business and your personal life. So you landed on 6 months for each because, you know, I always give ranges in terms of how much I think we need to have saved. And so for your personal life, I think 6 months is totally fine. For business, you know, I think 6 months is kind of on the higher end, but you also wanted to do that for other reasons because you knew that you were going to be focusing on building up your second business, which is a lot newer. It's not really well established yet. And so knowing that you may have a dip in revenue in the short term, so it made more sense to keep a higher level of cash in the business.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And it depends on your ultimate goals. So even though I have been designing since 2019, because I haven't been full-time, the projects that I'm taking on now and the way that I'm positioning myself, both in the design world, but then also how I plan on moving forward by supporting designers and contractors is not as clear as I would like. Again, I'm a control freak. So I had to give myself some wiggle room to figure out what is it that I like doing. I was actually updating my website copy recently to be more in line with my philosophy on design after having gained some experience and clarity really on how I like to provide design support to clients. And even that process was a struggle for me because it's hard to capture exactly what you want to do and the services you want to provide when you have more opportunity than you did previously. So a full-time gig is much different when I can give 100% of my focus to growing my business. So previously, I had to say no to certain jobs because I didn't have the capacity and I didn't want to not be able to give the client 100% when I took on their project. So in a lot of ways, I pigeonholed myself intentionally. And now that I don't have those constraints, I needed runway to be able to figure out exactly what I wanted to do and how I wanted to do it. So if you are doing a side hustle and you're planning on making a corporate exit, and you plan on working with clients the exact same way you've always worked with clients, then I don't think you would need as much cash because you already have an idea of what you do and how you do it. If you're like me and you're not quite sure exactly where the road is going to lead, the extra security made me and my family feel a little bit better about that in the long run.
Yeah.
I really do not want to go back to corporate. So it's like whatever I can do to make sure I don't have to go back and get a job working for somebody else is really my ultimate goal.
I think this situation applies not just to somebody going side hustle to full time. I think really any business owner needs to build the foundation that you built because most people, I mean, I've seen how many hundreds of financials at this point, most business owners don't have any security at all. Now, I like it better when I see a client who has a lot of cash sitting in their checking account because I know we have something to work with right off the bat. Like that cash came from somewhere, right? We can figure out an answer to the question, what is this money meant to be used for? For you, most of it was to go to your cash cushion or emergency fund. And so we were like, okay, we're going to create an account for that money and that money is going to live there instead of in your checking account. And it's going to go and it's do its job, which is just to sit there and earn some interest in the short term, but to sit there and be your emergency fund. But I think the same situation, the same thought process applies even for people who maybe they're a solopreneur and they're ready to start hiring a team. You know, like you need to have the foundations in place because if you go and try to take on a team member, that's usually people's biggest expense that they incur. So if you don't have the runway, you can get yourself really into a bind. So that's why I asked you to come on here. It's not just about side hustle to full time. It's really just the financial foundation, period.
And having peeked into the backside of a couple of designers' businesses, I also find it very common for people not to pay themselves. or not to pay themselves regularly, or to not pay themselves enough. And when you do start to take on the idea of bringing in team members, most of the time people feel very loyal to the people who are working for them. And that becomes something that they want to make sure that they continue to support. So, you know, I'm responsible for that person's livelihood is kind of the thought process. And then again, you start to put yourself behind everything else, behind your business, behind your team members' needs. And I think to your point too, it's ultimately about building that muscle and getting into the habit of saving and paying yourself and figuring out what you need to do to make that work. And I know we loosely follow Profit First. I've read Profit First many years ago when I actually first started the business. And I love the principle behind it of making sure that you're allocating certain percentages to the different parts of your business to make sure that you are profitable and that you have everything covered. And I think it keeps constraints in place where constraints need to be so that, for example, expenses don't become out of control. And if you're out of control, you got to figure something out, either make more money or raise your prices or take something out so that you don't have to worry about those issues. And that's a lot of what you and I spent time doing back in the fall was figuring out how to make use of the money that I had and like really what did it make sense to keep for covering. And some things are even like a nice to have, but I didn't necessarily plan for those expenses. Like if there was a service that I have in place now that's an annual subscription that I'm not like definitely need, I didn't plan money for that because theoretically I could run my business without it. And then there are other programs like my CRM system or my client relationship management software that I use that essentially runs the entire back end of my business. I have enough money to cover that because I can't work without it. So just making those decisions, I think, was really key. And I'll be honest, like saving the money was not the hard part. Like the hard part was taking the time to sit down and go through every single detail of my business. And I think ultimately that's where the money goes. The money and putting together your financial picture brings everything to light.
What do you think made that process hard to do?
Because it's not just about figuring out how much things cost or even about cash flow. It's making decisions about how you want to run your business. And so, for example, like thinking through how do I want to provide services? And if I provide them one way, eventually I'm really going to need team support to be able to sustain that model. If I provide them another way and I take more of an individual solopreneur approach, I'm going to invest in different ways, so different systems and things like that. And trying to come up with a strategy behind the money was the most challenging part. And then on the other side of that, not getting so deep in the strategy that you get paralyzed is also a part of it as well. And just taking the time to stop and think through it is what was a challenge.
Yeah, I think it's a lot. It can feel overwhelming to have to make big decisions, but then also I always remind people, you don't have to stick with your decisions forever and ever. You're allowed to change your mind. You are going to change your mind and things are going to change over time, but you build, like you said, the muscle of knowing how to plan and how to be able to put on your CEO hat and say, okay, what do we really need to be doing in order to run this business? What do I need to make sure we have, you know, to make sure we have the cash flow where I want it to be? Building the muscle is the important part. I think for some people too, I don't think this happened to you, but I see a lot of people very frequently also avoid that whole process of looking into the numbers behind their business because they're afraid of what it's going to tell them. They will like picture if they look under the hood that it's going to show them that they're just a hot mess and their business is failing and no one loves them and they're just not going to make it. And they just would rather not know that because it feels scary. But I think ultimately, honestly, that almost never happens in reality. And honestly, even if that was the case that, you know, your stuff was just a hot mess, then you'd want to know now so that you can fix it, right? And so it's really just about taking the very intentional steps and then setting aside the time. And you did all this work, right? And so now you're really in maintenance mode.
No one was more surprised that I had saved $65,000 than me. I was like, wait a minute. I had kind of buried my head in the sand. I didn't have the time to look into it. And so that's really where I was also digging myself out of the hole I had created. And the sooner you can get on top of it, I feel like I use that as an excuse. I was busy. Yes, and I was busy. So I'm not trying to downplay the fact that I was wearing a million hats, but I didn't pay attention to it because I didn't have to. And so if I had done a little bit of that work ahead of time, and I think gotten my finances in order sooner, I wouldn't have been as stressed out about it. I probably would have ran things a little bit differently, but you know, it is what it is. You can't really go backwards, but it's a point of advice. The sooner you can get to it, the better. And so even aside from having to figure out my financial for the business, the other part that required a lot of heavy lifting was figuring out my personal side of things. That's one of the things I really like about your plan and how you work with people is that you teach them how to interweave the two. So, and you'll also say like, why do you need that much money? Like, what's the point of having X amount of dollars? Why do you want to have $1 million business, whatever the number might be? I'm like, well, I don't know, because that's how much I need. But having to sit and go through how much do I need to bring home to actually pay my bills versus what I'm making now. Maybe what I'm making in corporate wasn't absolutely necessary for me to be able to leave my job and still make ends meet. You know, obviously there's nice things we like to have and lifestyle that we like to live, but knowing the difference. And one time I remember you saying, well, this payment is only $300, Misty. So like, if you can't pay, I'm paying it off, like working on paying down debt, something really important to me. So if you can't pay this 1 month, like beyond what you are slated to pay, like what you have to pay, it will be fine. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess it will be fine. It's just perspective.
Yeah. So do you think I don't think I've asked you this before, but with your husband, he is in the financial space. Before you went through and got all of your stuff mapped out and planned out, did you talk to him about money frequently?
Yes and no. We share finances. All of our finances are pulled together. So we are more on the same page just because of the way that our financials are set up. But we also gotten comfortable having two full-time corporate salaries. If we knew how much we had, we don't really have any debt. Again, we didn't have to think about it. I think that's the kind of the theme running throughout this entire conversation is we just didn't put a lot of thought or intentionality behind what we were doing. And really when I started my business, part of it was because I wanted to work for myself, but I also like the idea of being in charge of my own wealth and figuring out how to build that for myself independently, figuring out how to build it for my family for now and for the long run. And those are the kind of conversations that we began to have. And he's never meddled in my business at all. He's very supportive, but is like, you're a smart woman. I know you're going to make decisions that are the best decisions for you and for the business. And as long as it wasn't impacting the family in a financial sense, he really was fine with it. Leaving corporate is a completely different experience, though. So we had to have that conversation. And I needed him to be comfortable with the decision. I didn't need his permission. I think that's different from the fact that we actually just celebrated our 15th wedding anniversary yesterday. Yeah, we've just to continue to have a really close relationship. I think being honest and open and supportive of each other is important.
Yeah,
and because he's a financial analyst, this is what he does all day, every day: forecasting. Going back and reviewing financials from the previous month, like that's his jam. You would think he'd be up in my financials, but he's not. And that's probably a good thing. But I did have to be able to show him this is my plan for making sure that we can continue to basically pay bills. And that was hugely helpful to give him concrete numbers. And he'll even say now, I never had a doubt you were going to be successful, but there's just something that makes you feel better, myself included, about having transparency and knowing what's under the hood.
I think, you know, for anybody who's in a relationship, I think it's just so crucial to be on the same page with your partner about money stuff. And the women I work with, I will say it is more common that they let their husbands handle all of it than not. So my husband is like your husband. My husband is very hands-off with business stuff and he trusts me to do the right thing, which is great. But I've also had conversations with a lot of women who can't do anything or won't do anything without the permission of their husbands, even if their husbands are not a business owner. So I'm just like, We want to get to the place where you are confident in yourself and in your skills, not just on the saving side and the cash flow management side, but also in your ability to go and make money, to go and generate an income so that when you're faced with other people's questions or doubts about yourself from somebody who's not a business owner generally and has no clue what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. So when you're faced with those doubts, you can stand up and say, no, this is what's up. We just have to have the confidence. So I think that it's amazing that you have, I mean, I feel like you have that now on the cash flow side and saving side of your business, that you have built up that confidence around being able to plan and know what's going on and know which of the businesses you're going to focus on and what's coming next and how are you going to make money. One thing I wanted to come back to is you said, you know, you don't have to have $1 million business. I do think, you know, a seven-figure business is great. And also, I still question when people just knee-jerk say, I want a seven-figure business or I want an eight-figure business without really thinking about it. And so I can't remember, I should have looked this up before this, but when we did our strategy session and we walked through and talked about your wealth strategy, that was one of the things I really loved, that you came in and you're like, I want to focus on how I'm going to create wealth from these businesses. And I was like, yes, let's go. And I mean, I think we mapped it out and you don't actually need to have a seven-figure business to make your goals happen. They'd happen faster, right? But you don't have to have that level of business to hit your wealth goals.
It's still a lot of money, but it's not a seven-figure business. And I think the other thing that was helpful is seeing if you structure things the right way, you don't have to have a million projects either. You know, if we map things out correctly, I can do 4 to 6 big projects a year and have enough money to double my annual take home from a salary perspective, plus have savings, plus hire 2 team members to be able to support the running of those 4 to 6 projects. So again, there's just power in the numbers and being able to look at it from that perspective. I was working with another designer on developing her processes and her systems. And I think sometimes we just think we have to do all the things to be able to meet our goals. And when she was sharing what she does currently and the type of projects that she does, she's like, well, I do it and I kind of feel like I have to have it because I need these bigger projects to pay the bills. But I really enjoyed this kind of project. And I said, well, let's back our way into that. How many of this kind of project do you actually need to make the amount of money you're telling me you want to make? And it was like a very small number with a very reasonable design fee. But because she had never sat down and looked through her numbers on her own, she hadn't thought of it in that perspective. So she was like, okay, well, now I think I have to go back and think some more about really what I want to do. And that's where the control comes into play, is it actually gives so many of us the control that we're after, just from a different perspective. So instead of trying to control all the things and do all the things so that we have control, your control is more focused.
Exactly. You don't have to have a seven-figure business. I think what we mapped out for you was a mid to high six-figure business while maintaining a high level of profitability. And to be clear, I'm not opposed to continuing to grow into the seven-figure range. I think obviously that's what I'm doing over here, but I think I would rather see somebody doing, you know, $500,000 to $600,000 in revenue and keeping 50% of it. So what is that? Like $250,000 to $300,000, keeping that much? I'd rather see you be at that level of business than try to get your business up to doing like $200K per month, which would be, you know, a $1 to $2 million business, and keeping that same amount of money, right? I'd rather see you keep it smaller and structure your business so it's easier to run and makes really great profit margins than try to scale up thinking that the higher level of sales, it's what's going to put the money in your pocket, because it's really not.
No. And intentionality is the other word that I keep going back to, is if you decide to build a $1 million business, do it with intentionality and know what you're doing and why you're doing it. I have been planning myself to eventually hire someone. And to do that, that's another area where I'm working on building up a nest egg. So when I bring that person on, I have runway to help train them and get them to the point where they're actually profitable, because most people out of the gate are not profitable. And if they are, you're going to have to pay them way more. They're ready to go out of the gate. So if you're doing that, like to your point, knowing that with growth comes an increase in expenses. And every time that happens, if you aren't intentional about how you are managing that growth, then you can very quickly make more gross revenue, but take way less home from a net perspective. And so my goal is to build a bigger business. And that's something I've been very clear about from the outset, but I have reasons for doing it. And it's a part of not only how I want to serve my clients, but it also is built into my core values and why I went into business in the first place. So intentionality is ultimately what that comes down to.
Yeah. I mean, you and I are similar and we've talked about this, but it's about keeping, you know, your design business is an asset, right? Like you've built the brand, you've done the work, you've got all these things going for you. And also you're ready to focus on the next thing. And so hiring somebody to help you keep the design business going is a great business decision because it'll allow you to continue making money over there and then be able to take your time and put that into developing your other business. So I will say I agree. I think most team members, you're probably going to spend at least a couple of months getting them trained up to where they're able to run things at the level you want and be profitable. And also the better the systems that you have, when you have good offers and you have good systems, it'll be that much faster to get the team member dropped in and up to speed quickly, which I know you have already and will continue to develop. So, I mean, obviously that's what's next for you is getting up to where you can hire support and build up your team. So is there anything else that is coming next for you?
As you know, it's always a work in progress, and I have been working really hard to let things come to me and respond to what the market is asking me to provide, both on the design side, but also when working with people in the industry. I have been working on networking as a part of my goal strategy for Q2. To put myself out there and really make connections. I believe in building relationships to support strong businesses. And through these connections, I am discovering that there are so many businesses that lack systems and process. And the design world in particular, I feel like is overly complicated. There are so many moving parts. It's why people hire designers, aside from the pretties and the aesthetics and style. That is part of it, but it's a lot to manage when you're trying to figure out what to order. Does it fit? Who's going to take care of unboxing everything? If there's problems with anything that you order, who's handling those problems? Do you have time to manage all that? No. So that's one side of it. But then the other side of it is how all of the different trades and industry members work together, and no one does it the same way. So I might have all of my processes buttoned up for my business, but then I work with one contractor, even if they have good processes in place, who does things differently from another contractor with whom I regularly collaborate. And knowing that if we don't have everything in place, that it impacts what we've been talking about, profitability, because if we don't know what's going on, then it takes longer. It causes mistakes that end up costing you in the long run. So having these conversations with contractors, I'm learning that they are really looking for someone to not only help with the design piece, but to help manage the process side so that they can provide a really good client experience. Regardless of how I end up providing services, at the end of the day, it has become very clear to me that this intersection of design and process is really unique. And I have the opportunity to provide my clients with a phenomenal experience because I am so process oriented, but I can also really help support other members of the industry by helping them with their processes and systems as well. My long-term goal is figuring out how to help other businesses with the hiring process. So my background is also in HR, strategic management and HR, essentially helping businesses with growth. And it doesn't matter if you have really good processes and really good systems, if you don't have someone to train them on those processes and systems and to help develop them. And people who are running businesses are very busy. So they think the solution to that is hiring someone. And a lot of times it is a solution, but if you're not prepared with systems and processes and you're not prepared to have the time to train them, you're going to end up losing money because you're going to be paying someone who's not going to be able to deliver the results that you need probably losing money on them, but also losing money just in other ways that weren't expected as well because you weren't prepared. So figuring out how to recruit, hire, train different people from the operations side of things, almost like part-time experts, fractional support, so you don't have to hire them full-time and you just use them for what you need them to do in your business is, I think, where we're headed long-term.
What I'm hearing is the moral is pivoting, which is something we always have to do. So paying attention to the market, paying attention to how things change, you know, what do your ideal clients want? How do they want it delivered? All of that can change over time. The marketing channels, for example, Instagram used to be one way. Now you have to show up differently and use Instagram in a different way. And so not just relying on one marketing channel and knowing when it's time to go try something different, not just putting your whole business on the line with one marketing strategy, never having, you know, other strategies you try, never having one-on-one, like real conversations with people. So I think it's back to what we said before, which is having just the skill set to be able to go and make money in any environment is really what we're building. And then the goal is to build the business around like figuring out what is the easiest way to make money from, you know, the area that you're in and just keep doing that over and over again, but also paying attention enough to know if you're going to have to pivot, which is totally normal, that you're able to do that. And also knowing the more on top of your numbers are, is really being on top of the pulse of your business, the faster you're going to see that you need to pivot, or the faster you're going to be able to take advantage of opportunities that present themselves, like you're saying, because you have a plan for what's going on.
For sure. Well said.
Okay. So is there any last little piece of advice? If you could just give us one thing for people listening that you haven't already said, what would you say is the best thing that they could go and do today?
Just do it. You're never going to have a crystal ball. And whether just do it for you means just quit your job already because you've put it off long enough, or just starting a business, whatever your just is, just do it, because you're never going to be able to have all the answers. It's just impossible. You just have to have a leap of faith, take a leap of faith and go from there.
Yes, that's a good one. Take a leap of faith, because we can never have 100% foresight into exactly what's going to happen. I like to say, feel the fear and do it anyway. Okay, I know we have a lot of designers who listen and also people who want design for themselves. So tell us where we can find you and how we can connect with you.
You can find me at my website at cocreativeinteriors.com. And I'm on Instagram, Facebook, all the socials at Co-Creative Interiors as well. And you can reach me for either of those services, whether you are interested in design services or if you're interested in working with me to streamline your design business or your construction business, whatever the case may be.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate the honesty. I know sometimes it's not easy to come on and talk into a microphone and, you know, have some real talk about what happens in your business. So I appreciate it.
I appreciate you. I've told you before, there's no way I would have left if I hadn't found you and really made the commitment to figuring things out. So thank you for your patience and giving me the tools I needed to feel like I could step away from my corporate job and really go after the dream that I've had for a really long time.
I'm glad that you came on and we did it too, because if you are still in your corporate job right now, that's just not where you wanted to be. So I'm really glad you're able to take the leap and do all the things that you're doing now. All right, y'all, I hope you enjoyed this episode with Misty. As a reminder, the doors to the High Profit Society are opening to the waitlist tomorrow, Friday, April 26th, and then to everybody else on Monday, April 29th. So if you are ready to grow your business to the next level, if you're ready to create a plan like Misty did to go from side hustle to full-time or from solopreneur to having a team, but do it profitably and do it more easily, that's what the High Profit Society is all about. So you can go check that out and get signed up at sarahhyoung.com/society. And the link is also in the show notes. All right. So I hope you enjoyed this episode and I'll see you back next week. Thanks for listening to this week's episode. Listening and learning is great, but implementing what you learned is even better. So what's one thing you can do this week to make more money in your business, save for your financial future, and start living your most prosperous life? If you found this episode helpful, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts and share with a friend because it helps me reach more amazing female entrepreneurs like yourself. See you in next week's episode.